call of the November 2 communications finance committee meeting to order. November 2, 10 o'clock a.m. Item 1, call to order. We just did that. Item 2, consider finding that a result of the COVID-19 emergency, blah, 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 is what we need to do. Tom, you want to do this?
I'm going to let Amelia read it. It's basically a new thing we have to do before every Zoom meeting.
So there'll be one of two agenda items to be read out loud, and then the members of the committee need to agree or disagree that they want to have the meetings that month happen on Zoom. This will be a monthly occurrence. Consider finding that as a result of the COVID-19 emergency, one, meeting in person would present imminent risks to the health and safety of attendees, and two, the meeting is authorized to be held by teleconference pursuant to government code 54953, subdivision E1C. Do you, Marty and John, wish to have this meeting via teleconference this morning?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Item 3, comments from the public. If there are any, we'll take them now, or if you want to raise your hand during the regular agenda items, if they specifically apply, go ahead and do that. Any hands or chats?
I do not have any hands or chats, but joining me in the conference room this morning is Mr. Ted Hart. So he may have comments later coming from
me. Good. Hi, Ted. How are you?
Good morning.
Okay, we can hear you as well.
Very good.
Should we move on to item 4? Is that where we are now? Hello.
Yes.
Okay, item 4, finance monthly updates, recruitment.
Yes, very quickly, we have just some quick updates for the committee. We have hired an accounting manager and an accountant. Jennifer Yee is going to be our new accounting manager. She starts next Monday. She has an extensive background in accounting, well over 20 years, and she worked her way up through the positions to the accounting manager with ACC Senior Services. And she has extensive experience in both accounting and budgeting, and we're looking forward to having her on board. We have also given an offer that Manoj Pal has accepted. He has currently been working with us since June of 2021 as a temporary or a contract employee through Robert Half. And he also has extensive governmental experience in accounting. And we have really enjoyed having him on board these last few months. He's provided us with some valuable knowledge and skills and really helped us clean up some of the stuff that we've encountered in the accounting office and has been doing a great job. And we're very fortunate that he has accepted the offer, and he also will be an official full-time district employee November 8th. We have also posted the two new accounting technician positions for HR payroll and utility billing. We have received probably a little over 20 applicants within the first couple of days of posting those positions. And so we've already reviewed those applications, and we'll start contacting them to start scheduling the first round of interviews. We're looking forward to filling those positions rather quickly. And we have a lot of excellent candidates that applied for both of those positions. So we're looking forward to getting some good candidates on board, getting these positions filled, and really getting the district administration office back on track. So that's really the only updates that I have for the finance committee. Does anyone have any questions?
I just have one question, Paula. It's more of a curiosity. When we hire away a temp employee, there used to be a bounty of some kind associated with that. Is that still the way they work?
Yes, that is correct. We did negotiate our payment to Robert Half. So it was significantly less than what we had expected to pay.
What do you want me to do?
Kelly. Oh, there we go. And so it was significantly less than what we had anticipated. But yes, we will be paying it's a finder's fee.
Right. Okay, no problem. I was just curious if that's the way it still worked.
Yes.
Anything further on recruitment? That's all good news. A general update on current finance. Is this you again, Paula?
Yes, we basically have started working on the 2021 audit. Cindy Sun has provided Ingrid Richardson with Richardson CPA extensive information. She's compiling all of that now and has got most of the information uploaded into our shared files so that Ingrid could start working on our audit. We've cleaned up a lot of 2021 data, so we're hoping to give her some clean data within the next couple of weeks, and it's looking really good, actually. So we're happy to have started that, and are looking forward to working with Ingrid again this year on the 2021 audit. And then we've also resumed monthly financial budgetary reporting. There are some tweaks that we have to do with the consolidated report, which rolls all of the funds together, but we still have all of the detailed information that we can report at the November board for all of the individual funds.
Anything further from you, Paula? I have a question just concerning just current finance. Where are we with the conversion to a new system?
So we are, we noticed on the website last week, a letter of intent to go into contract negotiations with Tyler Technologies. We will be reviewing the contract information this afternoon and working with, I believe they're now called Consult Wisely. There are IT consultants that we had hired to help us to negotiate this, get us through the vendor contract process. So we'll be working with them to get this updated, get the contract negotiated, and hopefully move forward rather quickly with an item to the board to move forward with the implementation of a new system.
So do you guys have at this point in your head or on a piece of paper a timeline for the entire process? What do you realistically think the conversion date might be on this?
So for me, my goal date is to start July 1 with a new system. It's a rather aggressive timeline, but I think we're a small enough agency to where there's not going to be a lot of data conversion that we're going to need to implement into the new system. I think having us fully staffed is also going to assist us with meeting that timeline. We do need to work with Tyler. They're looking at an 18-month implementation with a full year for just general ledger. And we'd like to speed that up to have the general ledger, everything with the exception of utility billing, being completed, up and running, and implemented by July 1 so that we could start the next fiscal year off very clean. You know, obviously that's going to take a lot of work, and we'll need to work with Tyler on that timeline. I would say probably best bet would be end of the calendar year of 2022, maybe, would probably be more realistic, but would definitely not be my preference.
Okay. So in terms of the conversion with the GL, are you guys at the same time we're cutting over, or are you contemplating any modifications to that GL coming out of Great Plains? Is there any pre-work we're doing or feel we have to do to convert over what we think is any changes would be to our existing GL, or does that come after you convert?
No, we are already working on that right now. We have procured some other districts' chart of accounts to review and see if that will work with our implementation. Cindy Sun, who is our retired annuitant, has extensive background in ERP implementation. And so she has taken our chart of accounts and she is reviewing it to start eliminating the accounts we don't need moving forward and identifying the accounts that we will need moving forward. There's a lot of clutter, so to speak, in our existing chart of accounts. And so I think we can clean a lot of that up, and then we can add to it and provide a little bit more detailed accounting, especially with our budget reporting moving forward in the new system. So we are working on that ahead of schedule. We're also cleaning up our vendors in Estiva. I'm currently working on cleaning up all of the stuff in Paychecks so that it's a clean cutover. And so we are doing a lot of that pre-work, so we don't spend a lot of time doing that during the implementation. We want to make sure that we have clean data to move forward with. And so there is a lot of cleanup that's going on right now.
Okay, super. Marty, anything?
Yeah, I just would ask, when do you think we're going to get back to the reserve issues?
Yes. So now that Michael Fritchie is on board, he and I are, and Tom are going to schedule some time to sit down and go over that so we can take a look at everything with regards to reserves. You know, there's several different components to it, and, you know, our fixed assets and the reserve study, as well as our financial reserves. So we all need to have this discussion and figure out the policy moving forward and bring that to the board, as well as what our reserve positions are for, you know, over the next 50 years based on that study. And we've, you know, been extremely busy with so many things, and but this is definitely on our radar, and Tom and I are going to be bringing Mike up to speed on what's been currently done, and then we'll probably bring something to the board in either December or January regarding the reserve policies and the reserve study and where we move forward from there.
Paula or Tom, did we start on and make progress on cleaning up the asset list? Was that something that Paul had started, or are we just coming out of the box right now with that?
Paul had done a little bit of work on this. It was, I didn't get a lot of time to interact with him as to why he made certain changes to the asset list, but it's a pretty extensive list, and I'm asking Michael to go back through it and work with Travis and Ron to make sure that all the items on the list are still in use. Or, you know, I think there's a number of items that have been requested multiple times or listed multiple times, and it's not a clean list. The coordination that Paula and Michael have, finance and operations, is critical to having a good fixed asset list. You know, just so you know, we have a big fixed asset list we use for financial reporting and audits annually, that they make depreciation estimates out of that. And that list was kind of kept separately from the list that Paul used as far as his replacement schedule for valves and pumps and some of the things you hear Michael talking about today, the PLCs and you know, all the mini fire hydrants. So there was a disconnect that we've reconnected. So there's some work to do there, but it's not insurmountable. And again, like Paul said, now that we have staff, we're able to spend the time we need to clean up the list, narrow it down to just the equipment we need, and then start timing the replacement so we can build the replacement schedule I keep promising you.
I'm just curious, is in terms of all of the stuff that we own, right? You know, from valves on up to I guess the Granley's Dam. Is there any kind of identification process or tagging process that gives each item we introduce into the infrastructure an ID? I mean, one of my frustrations looking at even that first reserve study we did back in 2014 and 15, I mean, this stuff has some very strange looking names, and I'm not sure collectively if some of it we even know what it is. I'm just curious, is there a way to get a better handle on what it is we really own?
Well, the answer to that question is yes, because we don't have a good handle on it today. For things like the John Deere tractor and the two pumps that pull water from the large pond into the tertiary treatment plant, those are pretty simple to identify.
Right.
I do not know if they have tags associated with them. But if you look at the water treatment plant, the $15 million spent on the water treatment plant, Is that in the system as one big fixed asset? I don't think so. I think the large trains are separate fixed assets, but they're full of all this electrical equipment, all these valves and switches that continually are acting as it processes the water and tests the water before delivery. Some of those things I think are kind of in bulk, and when a part breaks, we just go buy it. The big pumps, the VFFs or VDFs up at Rio Oso, the VFDs at Rio Oso, those are separate items. They cost, you know, $50,000, $40,000 a piece. So the answer is yes and no, I guess, is what I just said.
Yeah, well, I'm just concerned that, you know, at some point, and I understand we're trying to do a lot of things at one time here, but that, you know, and maybe there are folks out there in organizations of a similar size. I know we're really unique in a lot of ways that use a system that better identifies that stuff and makes it easier to interpret as we go forward. I mean, you know, again, I know what we're trying to do here, and we're doing a lot of stuff, but it's always been confusing to me. I've looked at that stuff a number of times. Half of it, I have no idea what they're talking about. Maybe Travis does, but I don't, you know.
This is Mike. I'd just like to add something briefly. And I think one of the punchlines might be, you know, an asset management system. So, you know, a lot of organizations will have an asset management system. They have their major assets lined up. They'll have expected life replacement processes that feeds into a good CIP. And I think tying that in to our GIS system is, I think, would be a great idea.
Yeah.
Get an asset management system in place. B, tie it in. So if someone like you doesn't know what a thingamajigger is, you just search it and you get that information.
Yeah. And it's not that I have to personally know what it is. It's just that, you know, what I think we're going to experience is a really, really difficult job in going through that list, not only in weeding out stuff that we don't have anymore, stuff we don't need anymore, but also stuff that maybe we have and, you know, nobody really knows what it is and how to account for it when it breaks and we replace it. So, but anyway, that, you know, I'm done there, but it was just something that was on my mind as we work our way through this reserve study.
So to piggyback on what Mike just said, he actually jumped in the same time I was going to. So thank you, Mike, for bringing that up. One of the things that Tyler Technologies offers is an asset management module. And while that didn't come through in our RFP, that is something that we are interested in viewing and looking at possibly adding to this contract. We are moving forward with the original contract, but we do want to look at what they offer, see if it's compatible with our GIS system, see if the module will work for what we need. That'll give us a good idea of what's out there as far as Tyler Technologies. And then if it doesn't work, you know, we can obviously entertain viewing other demos with other software companies, but we do want to keep it self-contained. So we're starting with Tyler. So I just wanted to throw that out there that is on the radar and that is something we are looking into. It was just not part of the original RFP.
So we're going to get to the point, I guess, through this consulting process where you're going to actually bring us a recommendation to buy the whole kit and caboodle, correct? Is that how that works?
Yes.
So at that point, then I would think we're going to get a really formal presentation on what we're buying. And I'm assuming that's what's going to happen, right?
Yes.
Okay. Marty, anything?
One last thing. Are we planning to do an update to the reserve study this year? Or actually next calendar year?
That actually wasn't in the plans. I think we should do a reserve study every 2 or 3 years, as long as we're maintaining what they provided us. If we're not going to maintain it, then 12 months later, it becomes worthless. So we're trying to maintain this, and I think every other year it makes sense.
I think they have the, well, the ones I've been exposed to does an on-site like we did last year, and then intervening years they do a just an update with new pricing and added or subtracted line items. But maybe we can do the adding and subtracting ourselves. I don't know.
Well, they did build some tools into the system they provide that allow you to do stuff like that. But you have, you know, you need to stay on top of it. In the past, we haven't stayed on top of it. In the future, we plan to, because we plan to integrate it. And I know what you're talking about, because the cost of living, inflation, all that stuff has a big effect on how in your longer term forecasting for reserve requirements.
I personally feel we ought to be updating it every year. And otherwise, it gets to be too big a job every 3 years or whatever we choose.
Okay.
Yeah, that probably makes sense. I mean, I think first our big hurdle is to get it right to begin with. But going forward, too, it's interesting. I don't recall from some of the audits that we've done, isn't part of our auditing that they would take that list and they would go out and test a random number of items to make sure that what we're saying is really what's in the reserve study? That's always been the audits I've been involved in, you know, for years and years, where there was always a whole lot of testing on assets and inventory and everything else that went with it.
So typically in the audits that I've been involved in, the fixed assets portion is really more about depreciation and making sure that we're capitalizing our projects and fixed assets correctly. And so really it's more of an internal control procedure to ensure that we're doing those type of financial functions accurately. I do believe that Ingrid spent a lot of time working with Cindy Chow and then ultimately myself with the fixed assets, ensuring that the list was correct. And but as far as that goes, it's really more related to the financial, not necessarily ensuring that the property is actually there.
Right. And
more of us just categorizing it correctly and depreciating it appropriately.
Yeah, I was just always familiar with a process where if they came across an item that said, you know, $65,000 John Deere tractor, some of those items get tested and somebody really does go out and see if it's really there, you know, mm-hmm. and correct. It's not some employee's farm or something, you know? So, okay. That's satisfies my questions. Anything else on the general update, Paula?
I don't have anything. Does anyone have any other questions?
Any comments, hands, chats?
No chats, no chats, no hands.
Okay. Now to the main performance here, I guess. The sample security survey opinion poll.
This is mine. I've got this one right now. I want to say we did a pretty good presentation and it generated a handful of individuals to reach out with questions. And I also solicited folks to make comments on what, you know, the preliminary list of questions has been. And what I want to do is push to December's committee meeting the final copy of the proposed questions. And I want to work with the individuals who have reached out to us with their comments and their suggestions to formalize requested changes to the vendor, and let Timothy McClurney take a look at how we want to modify things. And we want to be, the questions are kind of clearly, what are we asking to have an opinion on? What are we really going to get if we move forward? And this option A, B, and option C, are they clearly defined as to how much it's really going to cost and what's the cost benefit going to be? So I don't think we're there yet, and I don't want to rush it to the November board meeting. So what I want to let the committee know is that we're still on a good schedule, that hopefully by the December committee meeting, I can be, you know, I can either have satisfied everybody to what questions they have, or at least tried to address their questions without being able to satisfy them, and bring that to this committee in December, which would be December 7th, and then to the board December 15th, and to hopefully do the polling in January.
Are we confident that we all understand what it is we're trying to find out? I hope that's clear. Is my perception of it different than yours or different than the pollsters? And I'm trying to reach back in my memory here to see if I understand that we all kind of agreed why, what it is we were asking and why we were asking it. Tom, do you have any?
Well, the statement all along has been, what is the appetite for the residents of Rancho Marietta, both behind the gates and on the other side of the highway, to paying more money to either meet the current level of security we're providing, which is being augmented with the property taxes, or accepting a lower level of security services with using less property taxes, or increasing the level of services and increasing the amount of money to be paid. So the question is, are the residents willing to pay more money for security services that they receive today or might receive tomorrow? And that's kind of the basic consequence of what we find in the poll. The idea is to build a scenario, and this is what Timothy tried to do after he held four working group meetings, and we had the town hall meeting, and now we're circulating the questions amongst people like you and I who pay close attention to these things, to try and come up with, okay, here's the scenario that he thinks is best to ask questions against. And he's leaning towards kind of a hybrid of what we have today with an insertion of formally adding more sheriff patrols and maybe additional either contract or staff for the high experience times. And so what happens when the poll is done, he has a scenario that says, if the district were to provide this, would you be willing to pay for it with an added special tax? If the answer is no, if less than 66% of the people say no, then we have to go back to the board and said, we tried to see if there would be a willingness to have a new measure, a J, a complementary measure to measure J, take it to the voters and get that approved. Then we would start billing them this additional amount every month. Not knowing, you know, we can't say, would you vote for this or would you vote for this or would you vote for this, because it gets convoluted. And so what we're working on is trying to come up with what Timothy feels is the scenario that best suits the question, the polling, and then to see what the willingness of the residents would be to have an additional cost they have to pay every month to have the level of security he described. Now, I don't have all the questions memorized yet, but there may be questions in there that say, if not this, then would you be willing for this? But it really has to be focused on, you need to make a decision, yes or no, on this scenario. So
Marty, go ahead. If you're not done, Tom, go ahead.
I can go on and on, but I'll shut up for a minute.
Marty, what do you think here?
I think Tom summarized what the intent was, and I'm in agreement with the intent. I did have some questions in the past and at the last board meeting of things that need to be answered, but if he's going to bring that to us on the next meeting, that's great.
Yeah, I appreciate the summary. I was just trying to make sure we were all clear on where we were going. My main concern throughout the process, number one, has been to measure the overall community temperature on security. Are you generally satisfied with what we provide? And I guess, like you said, there's a yes and a no to that. And each of those spurs different questions, understanding that we are or we're not, and I'm still a little fuzzy on this, saying that we will continue to prop up security with the $470,000 that we get from property taxes. I think we've said that we don't want to do that. But if we don't want to do that, I mean, it leaves us with that $1.3 million or $1.4 million to do the best we can with security. And is that acceptable, or do you want something else, or do you want more? I think that we have a lot of options if the public tells us the answers to those questions. That's just kind of my take on everything we've done to this point. If I'm misinterpreting it, I'd really like to know. And maybe it's something we do collectively when the five of us are in the same room. But I think most importantly, I'm trying to figure out, number one, are they satisfied with the status quo? Understanding that, you know, that might take more money is another question. And then ultimately, I'm really trying to figure out, do they want us to spend more money at all? You know, so I guess that's where we are. Do you have any questions out there, Amelia, or chats or anything?
I do. I have Mr. Ted Hart, who has joined me here. He had a comment, question. He's ready to speak.
Ted, go ahead.
Okay. John, you went back to say, okay, the purpose behind all of this was to find out, you know, or you keep referring to as the temperature of the community. And Tom gave a synopsis of, you know, what this was all about, which is the same thing that we heard at the very beginning, when all this started. And I know that you and Marty received, you know, my one page comments, but what I'd like to focus on is what this is about, and that is the survey itself. And this is where I run into some real objections, because the survey questions, as you have them outlined, you have 15 questions. Only one of them is relevant. All the other 14 are just feel good. How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? Where the reality of it is that you can talk about feel all day long until you get into somebody's wallet. And you now are looking at what the cost is. Well, the one relevant question is question 5, which is the one that says, we need $800,000, and in essence, you know, it'll be $25 a month. That's the question. It's the $25 a month. It's got nothing to do with all of these other superfluous questions that are just going to take up the ratepayers' time in answering all of this. It's not that the questions are bad. It's that I don't believe Northern understands what it is you're really trying to find out. And that is the dollar and cents issue here. Now, today's River Valley Times now has exposed to the community that the increases in salaries will cost another $7 a month. So the $25 is now $32. And it's just, I'm frustrated in the sense that I think this is just going around in circles. I mean, when you get all finished with it, what is it that you want to know? You want to know, is somebody willing to pay $32 or $25 more a month? That's what you really want to know. And all these other questions are not going to get you there, because they are the feel-good questions. And so from the questionnaire's point of view only, and that's I'm staying focused on, because I could go off onto the other issues concerning the security costs, et cetera, et cetera. But the questionnaires, I could pick up the phone as same as Northern's going to do and say, look, we've got a problem here. We've got to come up with some more money. And what we're looking at is an increase of $25 a month. You support this or don't you? That's it. So I'd be happy to, you know, engage in a discussion along those lines, but I just don't see it. So my comment.
Tom, anything?
Yeah, I appreciate Ted's help, and we're actually going to take him up on it. We got him here. He's hostage. But it's important to note that we can't just raise fees arbitrarily when it comes to security. The RMA could, the golf course could, the country club, but we cannot, because as a government agency, if we want to raise fees for security, we're required to go to the voters and have them approve a new special tax. And that's how we run our security department. That's what Measure J created. And so for us to go increase the amount of money we collect for security, there has to be a vote. And it has to be a vote that is approved by 2/3 plus one of the voters. It's not the eligible voters, it's just everybody who casts a vote. We need to get 2/3 plus one of the voters to say, yep, I'm ready to pay more money for more security. That's, you know, how we raise funds to support our infrastructure and our operations and water and sewer is entirely different. But for drainage and for security right now, we're bound by this process. So the only way we can collect more money for security is to establish an initiative, do the educational campaigning that we're allowed to do, educational information, and then let the voters decide. The other way we can add money to security is for the board to determine to allocate property taxes. And that is what the board has increased over the past 5 to 10 years, the amount of property taxes that are dedicated to fund security, which became obvious once we did a proper cost allocation analysis a couple of years ago. So those are my comments. So if it was the RMA, they do what they have to do. If it's a country club, they do it how they have to do it. But for us, this is our requirement.
Well, Tom,
that's why we're doing the poll. So we spend the money ahead of time to make sure that, and believe me, running the election is going to cost, we've estimated upwards of $150,000, $180,000. We've never got to the point where we have to actually map that out entirely, because we don't know if we're going to do it or not, or when we're going to do it. But in this case, that's the steps we need to take. If the poll says there's no way, or it says it's overwhelmingly supported, then we'll take action. The no way means we got to go back to the board, and the board has to decide where the security levels are going to be as far as how much property tax we're going to allocate.
Yeah, Tom, just my comment on that is that's kind of where I would feel much more comfortable in taking some type of alternative action, is first understanding if the community came back and said, we're spending X now, 35 now, and we don't want to spend a nickel more, or that gives us the leeway to go back through a normal board discussion and say, okay, understanding that, here are our options, and we could go from there. But, you know, I think that it still remains the overwhelming question for me, is to understand if the community feels like they're spending enough on security, and they don't want to spend any more. I mean, there's beyond that, there's options, but I'm all about understanding that first and foremost.
Good comment.
And Mr. Merchant, will you accept another comment from Ted Hart?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Thought so.
Okay, to Tom's comment on educational campaign, that's where we split. And what I mean by that is that the educational campaign has to be able to provide to that perspective a voter that it, or the person that's being questioned in the poll, that they have all of the facts, and they don't. They do not have all the facts. And that's the issue, at least from my perspective, that you really need to sit down and grind out. Because once again, to as the questions are set up right now, it doesn't really tell you that there might be an option, that there could be a different way to go. In essence, what you're doing is you've set this thing, I shouldn't say you, this has been set up to where there's one question and one question only, and everything is driven toward that. But when you ask the ratepayer that question, the first thing that's probably going to jump into a lot of their minds is, well, what else can we do? In other words, if I'm going to answer this question concerning $25 a month more, you know, a great majority of the people just say no, flat out. But the other issue that comes about now, the information concerning alternative methods has now been put out into the community via the River Valley Times. People are aware of the fact that there are other directions that you can go. So these questions, since they're all just pointed in one direction, and you've said it, is, in other words, will the membership be willing to pay more? Well, that's about half the question. Is there an alternative? The point being is that the alternative should be provided now in the questionnaire, not after you get it back and then the board decides, well, we now find out that the membership really doesn't want to pay anymore. So now we're going to sit down and figure out what to do. You can already figure out what to do. Everything is in front of you. So my comments, that's it.
Marty, anybody?
Yeah, the questionnaire is actually asked questions from the very highest amount down to the lowest amount, which is different alternatives of how much they're going to pay and what they're going to get for it. It's not just one question. So I'm perfectly happy with this questionnaire. And it needs to be given. We need to be given more information as to what's going to be included in the cost, and how is the tax going to be distributed. So I think we should see what Tom comes up with in the next go round and get it going.
Yeah, I would be one way or the other, Tom. Now, give me your plan again. We have the upcoming meeting is the November meeting. Are you bringing this back in December? Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, you know, whatever refinements based on the input you get going forward from this point, whatever refinements you want to make, I guess we lump into December. And I kind of agree, at least with Marty, that we'll listen to that. And then I think it's time to move forward.
Well, I want to say Ted makes some really good points, but there's not just one alternative. There's dozens of alternative models. And I think what we have today is what we have. And in order to pay for it, without using property taxes, we need more money from the ratepayers. That's all there is to it. If they don't want to do that, then the board can make the next decision. And then all those alternatives come into play. And, you know, I know what Ted's talking about, and I know what other people talk about, then it comes in a lot of different directions. There's a lot of different ways we could provide the security. But what we have today is what we've been doing for the past many years. And we, over the past few years, we've always supplemented our full-time staff with contractor staff, with part-time staff. And that's what we're doing today. It brings us to X amount of dollars in cost and versus X amount of dollars in one type of revenue and then another type of revenue. And hopefully they come pretty close to meeting in the middle, you know, balancing. So the first step is we really need to decide if what we have today is going to work and if people want to pay for it, or if they just want the same thing to happen, let the board decide. If there's a no on the poll, then we come back to the board with a proposed budget. The board then needs to decide how much are we going to pay for this out of property taxes, or you guys need to go back to the drawing board and scale down these services or figure out another way to keep services up with only the money we have, which there's a debate as to whether or not that's feasible using contractors or using full-time staff. But we got to get past this next step. That are you willing to pay more to have the services you have with the people you have? And that's a pretty simple answer.
That part I agree with completely.
With a very complicated set of debate, you know. So.
And the other part, just this is my last thought on this. And going back and doing the research for months and months and months that we've done, you know, I've come to a personal, opinion that, you know, I voted in that 97 JK election. And what we voted for is, and it's very clear through the campaign literature that was issued, what we voted for is not what we're providing now. Now, Dick Shanahan has provided us with an opinion that propping it up with property tax allocation is legal in his opinion. But I've never bought into, after I've looked at this for months and months, I've never bought into the fact that that's really ethical. I mean, that's not what the voters voted for. What it says we voted for is very clear, and we're taking extra funds to make that work at this point in time. And you know, that's I'm not saying that's not what we had to do, but I'm saying quite clearly, in my opinion, that is not what we voted for. So where do you, any suggestions on we're bringing this to the board, and I guess we're gonna recommend, Marty, that we come, no matter where we are at that point, we're gonna go up or down on this issue, right? We're gonna vote on the poll and go forward with it. Am I reading that correctly?
That's my understanding.
Okay. Tom?
That is my plan.
Okay. So it's clear what we're recommending to the board, and then we can, you know, come December when you're ready, we can collectively, the five of us, you know, decide where we're going to go. And you know, I want to make sure Ted and everybody else understands that their input is welcome and will help us to make, you know, a better decision. Okay. Chats, Amelia, hands, other. Hello, Amelia.
No chats, no hands.
Okay. Director and staff comments. Staff, Tom?
No, I'm good.
Anybody? Tom? No? Yes?
No, I'm good. I don't have anything more.
Marty, anything further?
No, I'm done.
Okay. All right, we can move to item 7, which is adjournment. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.